Look, I don't have time to get into this right now. As you can see, I'm up to my ears here.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 20, Men Are From Melrose. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hello, listeners. We want to tell you before we get into this episode what is going on the Patreon this week. It's going to be Again With This, episode 108, dropping August 19th. Let's watch Kristen Davis's debut episode of Seinfeld. That is season 8, episode 16, The Pothole. It is on Netflix. We'll link it in the show notes. You can hear that and so very much more. Our August Again With Them just around the corner for people at the $5 level and up. But the weekly bonus episodes are for everyone at all levels of support. Patreon.com/AgainWithThis. And thank you to everyone who does support us there and makes this podcast possible, honestly.
Uh-huh.
Let's start with our C-plot. The Michael, Kimberly, Megan triangle gets more complicated. Megan shows up to the beach house to tell Kimberly for the 500th time not to fuck Michael. Kimberly evasively says things are different now, but can't get into it. And Megan then drops the bomb that she and Michael are married. Kimberly, I mean, the fact that she's surprised at all is surprising, since she was the one who told Megan to take him to Vegas and marry him, but...
Yeah.
Nevertheless, does not change Kimberly's feelings, which are that Michael's the love of her life. Megan doesn't care. She is done sharing Michael. In Kimberly's heart, Michael's only wife. And Michael enters just then, looking shifty to see the two of them together. And Kimberly wearily tells him he should have told her about his latest marriage. And pissed that she spilled, Michael drags Megan out to the deck to yell at her that they agreed Kimberly was too sick to hear about it. But Megan doesn't think Kimberly's ever going to die or that she's even sick. And Michael scoffs at that, but Megan wants to know why Kimberly's fighting so hard to keep him then, which, fair point.
Yeah.
Sarah has run out of caring. Understandable.
I sort of get Megan's frustration while not caring about Megan.
Yes.
Like, every single set of notes I take is like, this is the best you can do by Marcia Cross.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
Show.
Yeah, get it together. When we see Megan next, she is stealing a lab coat and sneaking into the hospital to get a look at Kimberly's charts as though she would even know how to read them. The nurse that she finds very sarcastically addresses Dr. Habib per her name tag before saying Dr. Stein's charts are right over there and leaving Megan alone with them, even though Megan is clearly full of shit. Unfortunately for Megan, the first person she runs into in the hall is Michael. And after briefly yelling at her, he throws Kimberly's films up and sees the amazing shrunken tumor. And the next day, Kimberly goes to Michael's office to tell him what he already knows about her remission. He points out that in that case, she doesn't need a live-in doctor anymore, but she's sure his love and belief in her are the reason that she's getting better. Michael will always be Kimberly's friend, he says, but he is married to Megan now. And Kimberly cries that she created his whole relationship with Megan. He can't leave her behind now. And he's like, I don't know, man. You're going to have to figure it out. And she cries and it's sad. And then Kelly Rutherford is pretending to play the piano again when there's a knock at the door. She assumes it's Michael having just forgotten his keys again, but it's some dude we don't know and should not like, apparently, based on the way Megan immediately tries to keep him out of the house. But he shoves his way in. She protests that she doesn't know him anymore, and he disagrees. He's her best friend in the world, remember? As we probably already guessed, he was her pimp. He is named Josh. Josh the pimp.
This is like, if it's not the worst name for a pimp, it's like in the top three with Percival and Topher.
Yeah.
Like, this is just such a weird... And he's wearing that same sort of like late 90s, turn of the millennium, like suit with a bright spread collar shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Like the oh, what is that guy's name? I think of it as David Faustino fashion.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes.
That is just like, okay, but that doesn't make him an actual pimp.
Yeah.
Just because everybody was dressing like they were at cocktails at the Playboy Mansion. Anyway, yeah. No one cares, Josh.
Josh the pimp. When she reminds him that she is out of the business, he comments that it was rude of her to quit the way she did. One of his clients claims that Megan took money without performing services, and now that person wants the money from Josh the pimp. Megan promises that she or her husband can repay him, but that's not good enough, we learn, as he shoves her into the wall and says this, clip two.
How you'd get married, huh? You didn't ask me.
You thought you turned into Princess Grace? No, baby. You are a whore. That's something you shouldn't forget. You see, it's not about the money. It's about the principle. I'm back in your life, Megan. Now go get me a beer.
I mean, she's still living in the same house she was living in when she worked for him. Like, why now, Josh the pimp?
Yeah. Also, okay, first of all, just shoot him. Right. Watch Coed Call Girl. Mm-hmm. He'll be fine. It's fine.
Yes, it's true.
Valid self-defense, like affirmative defense. You'll be
yes,
fine.
Yes.
But also her?
Yeah.
And like, where have you been, Josh the pimp?
Yeah. That's my point. Like, you know, presumably she was not his only employee. And yeah. Given how dull she is, I doubt that she was like the best one, no offense.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I think there was some line about like clients calling to complain.
Yeah.
That she wasn't available. Mm. And it's like, yeah, right.
Yeah, seriously.
No. When Sid retired, sure.
Mm, yes.
I could see people being like, what happened to her? She was a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
Megan, no one cares.
No, it's true. On to the B plot. Speaking of no one cares, Jake tries to reconcile with Allison. In Sutter's Creek, Jake is packing up his dumb bike to return to L.A. when Colleen brings him out a cup of coffee and tries to pump him for more information on his fight with Allison. And he just goes ahead and says why he thinks he's about to lose another child, although he does not get into the specifics. And Colleen says she never told him about her pregnancy because of how rigid Jake is. And if Jake doesn't relax, he's going to lose Allison and his next child. But she hopes things work out for him. And then it's David's turn to say goodbye and say he knew who Jake was all along, so that bullshit at the end of the last episode when he was like, do you have a kid? Was like, bullshit. Colleen never told him. David just knew. And as we said in the last episode, he really actually does look like Grant Cho. You can see him in the visual aids. Especially in this scene. David says he used to get angry at Jake because he wasn't around. Jake says that when he did find out about David, his dad was about to adopt him, leaving out the part where Colleen asked Jake to terminate his rights and not tell David about their biological connection. David isn't mad at Jake anymore since he has a dad, and now he knows Jake does care in his way, which is kind of damning.
My notes are like, read him, David.
Seriously. So Sam is swimming laps when Jake gets back to the complex, and he's got his dumb motorcycle saddlebag on his shoulder. So he does park the bike on the street or in his garage, I guess, now that Jane is gone. So there is never a reason for it to be in the courtyard, ever.
No.
Anyway, Sam betrays her supposed friend by saying Allison's angry at Jake, but Sam's pretty sure Allison still loves him. Lady, shut up.
Yeah, Jake, way out of bounds. Way out of bounds.
Yeah. With a friend who has been your friend for 3 weeks, like, back it up. Back it all the way up to Maryland. Jake has been doing a lot of thinking and wants to make sure Allison knows he's changed. Yeah, he's undergone a personality transplant in the past 3 nights. But Sam then further blabs that she's taking Allison to an OB appointment later and maybe Jake can meet them there. Sam, I am begging you, shut your stupid Marilyn face. And even Jake is like, that's a bad idea. But then Sam suggests the parking lot after what? And Jake considers it. And on the way out after the appointment, we get this clip 3.
I really am sorry about the other day. I hope I didn't make things tense between you and Amanda.
Oh, no, it's fine. I just really want to concentrate on the future now, you know?
What? With Amanda, what? Is this a scene that got cut for the DVDs because they were all fighting at a Toni Braxton concert? Like, what is she referring to? I have no idea what that is.
I don't. I just assumed that I missed something because I was sleeping with my eyes open, which sometimes happens when Samantha is talking.
Yeah, no, I have no.
I'm not proud of it, but.
Well, I mean, fair.
I'm only human.
But I can't get mad about that because now I have to be mad about Jake being in the parking lot and Allison's this bitch face at Sam as Sam flaps her hands and pretends it's a coincidence is pure drunk Allison energy. And I love it. You can see in the visual aids. As Sam decides to try minding her own business for a second, Jake makes with the apology. Surprise, it sucks. Clip 4.
It's simple, really. I was wrong. I was completely wrong. I love you, Allison. And some of that got lost in all the other stuff. Are you thinking of another chance?
I don't know, Jake. You scared me. I really have to figure out how I want to live my life now. And I don't know whether that could include you or not. I really gotta get back home.
Yeah, maybe I'll see you again.
Yeah, maybe.
So, the writers have to be vague about what actually happened that he's apologizing for, because if they got into specifics, we would all be even madder. Like, there's zero awareness in anything Jake says that he understands what he did wrong. All he knows is that it made her mad, and this is fucking bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, usually I am a big proponent of just say you're sorry and don't qualify it. No buts, none of that. Just be like, I'm sorry, I fucked up, and then shut the fuck up. But in this case, I do feel that it's important for him to be specific about, you know, having no self-control or anger management.
Yes.
Like destruction of property, driving drunk, running away from problems, and being a fucking FLDS weirdo about her bodily autonomy.
Yes. Hello. Yeah.
Like, you don't love her, you just think you have a shot at still controlling her.
That's right. Yeah. You want a do-over with David, and you can't.
Yeah.
So you're gonna try to have it with this child through Allison. Whether she wants it or not. So barf again. God knows I hate to be on the same side as Billy on anything, but here he is the next morning accusing Sam of ambushing Allison at the doctor's office, which she did.
Yeah.
Sam characterizes it as bringing together two people in love and claims Allison was totally fine in the car afterward, which Billy chalks up to Allison not wanting to hurt Sam's feelings. Certainly more consideration than Sam gave to Allison's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes on making points in clip 5.
We saw what he did at D&D. Obviously, the guy's not really good for her right now.
Oh, I see. But you are, aren't you, Billy?
Oh, for God's sake. Is that what all this Cupid crap's about? You're jealous?
Well, whether you believe it or not, I was trying to help Allison and Jake. But as soon as he stepped out of the picture, you jumped in with both feet. I saw you two at work, the perfect couple back together again. And the last person you want around is the father of her child. Oh, great. This is just great. If you're going to dump me and go back to her, then at least tell me to my face.
I'll tell you what. This is completely insane. It's ridiculous and childish. I've got no more time for it.
Billy, don't leave like this.
No, I'm late for work.
I mean,
what does the show want? What does the show want from us? Like, spend a lot of time thinking about this, reviewing true crime properties. Like, there's always an ask in a show, right? That it's like, this is what the show is asking for you to do in terms of a time commitment and who you're, whose side you're supposed to be on.
Right.
But so often with this Samantha character, it's like, what do you want from us?
Yeah.
Do you want us to buy crab chips? I enjoy crab chips, actually. They're vile, but they're delicious. Mm-hmm. What do you want from us with this character?
Yeah. She's
like, don't be boring and obnoxious. Please clarify the ask so that we can turn it down with authority. Thank you.
Right. She is impossible to root for on any level. Like, every interaction she has with literally every other character, she's unbearable. Like, yeah. Going back to taking the job with Jane, selling out her old boss, moving in with Jane into her one-bedroom apartment, like, continuing to work for her when she was not getting paid. Like, just the list goes on of, like, what is wrong with this person? She really is. And, you know, as much as I don't think Brooke Langton is good, I also think it's a thankless part because she's just being moved around like a chess piece as the plot demands. No, she's not.
Agree.
The only thing consistent about her character is that she's a fucking doormat.
Well, or that they keep trying to make her this, like, Daffy character that's like that. Like, we don't need a Donna. We didn't need a Donna on original 90210, and we didn't really need the, like, Lucille Ball version of, like, King, but we definitely don't need it here.
No.
And there are already actors that can do this a little better. Like, give this goofy shit to Laura Layton.
Yes.
Instead of always having to play these, you know, Sid, poor little Sid, never happy at last.
Yeah.
Like, she does have, Brooke Langton, a couple of line deliveries, including one in this episode that, like, he, you know, shows up with the flowers and chocolate and she's like, all right, show us the loot. Like,
yep.
There's a glimmer. Like, she's not inept, but
yes,
she's in, like, she's in a romantic relationship on the page with a, guy who never has the right face on.
Right.
And she's this, like, superfluous style of character for this soap opera. And the whole thing, you know, like, she's not Olivier anyway, and that's fine. That's not the problem.
Right.
We haven't heard about Maryland in, like, a few weeks.
No, it's true.
I probably brought the Maryland Maloik, but I guess we'll see.
True.
Go Terps.
That night, Sam is moping on the futon when Billy comes home with the aforementioned flowers, chocolate, wine, and an apology, even though he was right for the first time in his dumb life. When he saw Allison at work, he told her he and Sam both hope that she works things out with Jake. And when he drops all the gifts in front of Sam, there's also a box of pastels, which is thoughtful. And they love each other and agree to stay out of other people's business starting now, I guess. And on a walk, Jake tells Allison the story of his trip to Sutter's Creek and then segues into some real bullshit, Clip Six.
You see, the thing is, I really blew it with them. And I guess you know how I get so fixed on things and how they should be, and I hold on to things so tight.
Jake, you're passionate. That's good. As long as you're not breaking things up. And yes, you can be a little bit rigid. So can I. I really think it's more than that. I think we have different dreams.
Everybody does, don't they?
No, I mean deep down. You can't bury who you are, Jake. I think you really want the perfect house and the perfect family. I don't think I can do that.
All right, then tell me, what do you want?
My dreams got beaten down so long ago, I can't even see them anymore.
We're perfect together. We can fix all of that.
I don't know, Jake. I don't know if we can.
Here's the other...
I mean, not if you're going to call his rage problem passion.
Oh, God, I know. And like this thing about like, I have dreams. This is what she's been saying this entire season, like starting when he first offered her the partnership at Shooters and she said no. It's like, we still have not determined what it is she does want, because she has just been going along with Jake so that he won't be mad at her. And now we're like in the back third of the season and they still, the writers still have not had this character determine what it is that she wants that is the opposite of what Jake is offering.
Yeah.
Or if it is the opposite of what Jake is offering.
Well, and I mean, like, if Jake is going to crimp your style, but a newborn isn't, what exactly is it that you're, I mean, are you going to become a doula? Because, all right, sure.
Sure.
But.
Yeah.
But the writers don't know either. They're just like, well, we're waiting to be told by the network which pieces have to be where at the end of the season. And until we know that, everybody's just going to have the same conversation 78 times at different outdoor locations.
Right.
Cool.
So at the end of this, even though she says she doesn't know if they can get back together, she takes his hand and forgiveness is nice, I guess. But again, there is just no coming back from the shit that he said and did. Like, I'm very serious. All of that is red flags. Like, unless what he's saying is, I am going into therapy to work on myself and I'll catch you in a year. You know, like, this is, it was very bad. Like, they way overdid it with how mad he was.
Yeah, they did.
And so this is all a problem.
If they don't decide pretty soon how they are going to non-abortionally subtract this pregnancy from the storyline, which I don't remember, but I assume that's what's going to happen, is that the old, you know, party of five Julia miscarriage.
Yeah.
Like, get on with it, because we can't unknow this shit about this character. And it's a shame, but here we all are.
Yeah. The next morning, Amanda continues to rule Clip 7.
Mm-hmm.
So, did your evening stroll with the bartender finally get him out of your system?
Your command of the insulting phrase has always amazed me.
You didn't answer my question.
Okay, not exactly.
Well, your command of the nothing phrase stuns me. What happened?
Honestly, I still care about him. I just don't know if I'm the right person for him.
The right person for him? Remember, this is the same jerk who was down in the courtyard screaming, making a fool of himself, busting up D&D. For God's sake, Allison, the guy is a selfish moron, like most men.
Amanda.
I hope you're not turning back into the weak-willed ninny you were before you moved in with me.
Would you listen to yourself?
What?
I appreciate your support recently, but I'm just trying to sort things out, all right?
No, it's not all right. Not if you're going to buy into a bunch of lies from a guy you can't trust.
Well, that's my decision, isn't it?
Allison, look at it logically. You come to me miserable and abused. I open up my heart and move you in with me. I give you your job back at D&D. You spend night after night talking about your future, your baby. For what?
For me to try to figure out what I'm going to do, which I am doing. I am not turning into you, thank God. So would you please just leave me alone?
Fine. I'll do that.
This is not the person that you need to kick out of your life, Allison. My God.
No. Please give them a spinoff where it's just like, or like a web series of them just like fixing lunch, clomping down to the courtyard and getting in some sort of like meep and deaningful argument. And then we see them coming back from work and being like, and another thing. I don't know. I'd watch it.
Well, here's the person Allison should cut out of her life. Clip 8.
That was quite a Donnybrook you guys were having.
Quite a Donnybrook? What? Is this something people still say in Maryland? Like, is Sam so weird because she is a time traveler? Because that would explain a lot.
I mean, I was like, that's not what Donnybrook means. I looked it up and like, it isn't exactly what Donnybrook means, but also I've been using it wrong. Mm. Cool. Thanks, Sam. Miriam Samster, a Donnybrook? Yeah, maybe she is. Maybe the question isn't what we're supposed to want for this character, but when?
Yeah.
Skidoo! I just don't. Why?
when Allison nicely asks after Sam and Billy, too nice given the ambush at the doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
Sam says Billy called Sam the love of his life. Does Allison think that Sam should believe him? Allison doesn't know. Sam decides she should because she feels the same way about Billy. Either you take a chance or you end up alone. And that gives Allison a lot to think about. And that night, Allison goes over to Jake's in her pajama pants, which you can see in the visual aids, but should happen a lot more in the show. We should see a lot more loungewear in the courtyard, in my opinion.
Yeah, I feel like we see Amanda's shorty robes a lot, but nobody else's real pajamas are happening. Yeah.
True. What happened between them caused a lot of damage, Allison says. Jake knows and repeats that it was all his fault. But Allison's been thinking Jake didn't want to blow it again, and neither does she. She dreams about taking chances in her life and never living with regrets. And she loves him. And the chance she wants to take is to be with him. Well, good fucking luck, lady. I don't support this decision at all. Last, we have our A plot. While Craig rankles Amanda, Taylor and Peter get papped, and Carter comes to his senses. We open the episode on Taylor pulling up to Peter's condo in a demented microfiber blouse and skirt set with, are the tiger stripes? You can see it in the visual aids. Let us know what you think this is. It's so ugly that it comes back around to, I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Her appearance is very evidently an unpleasant surprise for Peter, even before he says he thinks things are getting out of hand with them. She is sure he has felt something between them since he first kissed her outside the complex that time and ignores his half-hearted attempts to argue his way out of fucking her some more, attempts that seem even more insincere when he ends up on the floor on top of her. And he should have perhaps remembered that his front door is glass before fooling around in front of it, because Nick apparently followed Taylor and just hangs out watching them like a perv.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't have a camera. So after the credits, Nick's behind the bar when Taylor shows up, expressing doubts about her lies about why she is late. But they have to stop sniping at each other when Kyle comes out to flirt with Taylor, which she allows before taking off again to the bank, I guess because she's worried he's going to smell Peter on her. Unclear. But once Taylor's gone, Nick fills the creep void. Clip 9.
You told me to look after your wife for you while you were gone, but you haven't asked me for a report.
Nick, I was just joking around, man. Look, I know you and Taylor don't get along very well, but she's my wife. I love her. I trust her. Besides, rumors, they just cause pain.
Which Kyle is this now?
Right, today? Exactly. Nothing in his manner before gave any indication that he was kidding about having Nick look after her.
Yeah. Also, she's been staying out all night, every night.
Yeah.
And if you didn't know that, it's because you were out all night with your
question
boy.
Mark?
So,
yeah.
God, the storyline. Serenity Now.
At D&D the next night, Amanda storms into her former office and demands that Craig, its current occupant, turn it back over to her. He bitches that he just spent a bunch of money expanding her other office to her specs, but she wants separation from the staff. Clip 10.
And since we are partners now, and I am the more equal of the two, I'll be moving back in here.
She
word,
is.
Word, 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 word.
Craig folds, adding that Amanda's eventually going to realize he is a great business partner and a great guy to have for the rest of her life, and she puts on her sweetest smile to say, don't hold your breath, and it keeps it moving. And then Taylor calls Peter from her car to say she was on her way over and saw Nick parked out front. Peter tells her he will handle it and goes outside to confront Nick in the folksiest possible way, asking him in for coffee, etc. Nick says he's a people watcher and likes the view from out there. Well, Peter doesn't like to be watched or his friends to be followed. And Nick gets out to say he's just keeping Taylor and Peter from getting too friendly. And Peter says that if Kyle sent Nick, he can report that there is nothing going on. And Nick orders Peter to stay away from Taylor and then peels out. And then it's the next day and we're in medias res with Peter and Amanda as she demands to know what's going on with them. Totally no preamble for this at all. It's really weird. And he snits at her about Craig. She tells him yet again, nothing's going on. He goes on to say Craig spent more time at their apartment when Peter was living there than Peter did, which I think Craig came by once.
Yeah.
Okay. Amanda finally yells that Peter is obviously deflecting because of his own guilt about Taylor and asks if they are fucking yet. And his "I'm not getting into that with you" is a rather obvious yes.
Mm-hmm.
And after Amanda has stomped out, Peter calls Taylor at Kyle's to say they need to figure some shit out. Seconds after she has hissed at him that it's too dangerous for him to call her there, Nick picks up another extension and listens as they arrange to meet on his golf course that night at 10.
Of course.
Where else?
Jack Wagner contract writer. Oh.
So later, Sydney's waiting for Carter to wrap up his dishwashing shift. He wants to go play pool at Shooters, and for some reason, she doesn't say, "It's late, and I have to work tomorrow, so please stop all this." And then Taylor tells Kyle she's not feeling well, and she wants to take off, which is when I realize, oh, it's not even 10 yet, and this restaurant is closing. Nice businessing, Kyle.
Yeah.
But when Taylor has left, Kyle tells Carter to make sure everything in the kitchen is turned off and then he and Sydney can leave, which I thought was a preamble to Carter's going to burn the kitchen down here.
I same thought as it in was Boston. Too. Oh, God.
But after Sydney and Kyle have finished agreeing that Carter is a sweetie, Carter comes back and sees Sydney touching Kyle on the arm as she asks how he is. And Carter only briefly spies on them before loudly clearing his throat so they can guiltily move apart. And then outside, Carter asks how Sydney's car is running. His giving it to her was the nicest thing anyone's ever done for her, she says. And he is glad she could take it off his hands. But then some dude is there with a knife announcing actually he is going to take it off their hands and also Sydney's purse. And Carter, a dummy, tries to argue as Sydney hands over what the guy has asked for. And Carter then gets slammed against someone else's SUV for his troubles. And Sydney freaks out as the robber holds the knife to Carter's throat and threatens to cut his head off. But then Kyle is there to save the day by beating the shit out of the guy, who then runs away. And Sydney jumps into Kyle's arms to thank him while Carter looks on sadly. And on the fucking golf course, Peter tells Taylor things have gotten too complicated. Taylor claims she will figure out a way to deal with Nick, despite the fact that she has had the opportunity to do that for weeks and really has not done anything at all.
Yeah. And like, I mean, hasn't even dialed back the tude.
Mm-mm.
Like, does not care.
No. Peter finally has his dream job at the hospital. And instead of focusing on making people well, LOL, he is thinking about keeping all his lies straight. Like, no one buys this, Peter. Come on. So Peter and Taylor need to keep their distance for a while, he says. And Taylor says, clip 11.
If that's what you want, all right. But I'll miss being in your arms and pulling you to me and kissing you. If this is goodbye, I just want you to think about what you might lose. I mean, you've pursued and pursued Amanda, and you've hardly had one happy moment with her. But you and I, we listen to each other. What we get from each other, we can't get from anyone else. With us, it's destiny brought together by Beth. Be hard for me to say goodbye.
Try.
Because I love you. I adore everything about you. And I just want you to feel that way about me. Maybe just a little bit. Maybe more than a little.
Remember in the last episode when Peter told Michael Taylor had zero expectations of him? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the VC Andrews presents Melrose Place piano. Like, yeah. Runs are not helping, and neither is the fact that, I mean, given how long this is dragging on, Jack Wagner really is making a yeoman effort here, but
yeah,
his version of conflict, because, you know, again, creepy Taylor, Amanda.
Yeah.
His version of conflict just looks like she's farting constantly. But all she does when she is at Kyle's is eat cabbage. And then there they are in the golf course. And he's like, maybe.
Yeah.
Also, pee you.
Obviously, Nick has followed them here with a camera this time and gets plenty of photos of them fucking in what is truly just a wide open clearing. Like, guys, find a tree, something. My God.
Seriously, get in a sand trap, like anything.
Yes. And the next morning, Carter decides his flirtation with the working class has run its course. Clip 12.
You know, I think I've had my taste of the real world. And it's very interesting, you know? But wouldn't it be nice just to be able to get away from it all for a while?
Yeah. You talking about a trip?
I'm talking about me stopping this pretense that I'm not who I am, you know? That I don't have this money and... Yeah, I'm talking about having my private jet pick us up tomorrow night and take us to Mexico. Hell, you know, we'll go to Buenos Aires after that. I don't know. Why get beat up in the parking lots of L.A. when you can dance in the streets in Rio?
Carter, really, you don't have to do this. I like you any way you want to be. If you want to wash dishes, that is fine with me.
Well, you know what? I really thought about that, and it's not fine. Really with me anymore. You know, nothing personal, but I just, you know, the real world really kind of sucks. And I think that I would just rather be a filthy rich computer genius.
I'm from Buenos Aires, and I say kill them all!
Oh.
Fair. I also would rather be a filthy rich computer genius.
Yeah.
Oh, well. I am very good at washing dishes, though, probably better than Carter, so.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Sydney's kiss lets Carter know she is fine with him going back to his old life.
It's big of her.
That night, Taylor is heading out of the courtyard when Nick intercepts her with a big manila envelope full of pornographic art prints starring her, but he is not trying to do anything with them except threaten her to quit fucking around on Kyle. What? This guy hates Taylor. He would for sure take them to Kyle first.
Yeah, or... Amanda, if he really wants some homicidal fireworks.
Right.
That's what I do.
Yeah. Like, I know that Craig is the one who is paying him for this, but, like, you know, this has a side benefit of also benefiting the guy that Nick is, frankly, in love with. Like,
yeah.
Let's be real.
Yeah, let's.
Anyway. I guess someone thought Brooke Langton didn't have enough to do in this episode because when Carter comes to the store, she waylays him to say two different times how great she thinks it is that he is taking Sydney on this big trip. Why does she want good things to happen to Sydney, her mortal enemy? Like, what is this turn for the two of them?
So that if Sydney leaves the complex, maybe she can worm back in to that apartment?
Perhaps.
Won't matter, but we'll get to it.
It won't. Also, Billy was the love of her life, you know, the previous day, but fine. Fine, Sam.
Well, I mean, Dan's the love of my life, but I'm not sharing a fucking one bedroom with him. Sorry. We need more bathrooms.
Okay, fair.
Step aside.
I think his place is a two bedroom. Isn't he still in the place he was in with Brooke? That's the
two
bedroom.
It's still one bathroom.
Oh, one bathroom. Yes.
Yeah.
But it's a two bedroom.
Yeah.
Not that we ever see the other bedroom. Anyway, Carter goes to the back and hears Sydney talking to a customer just a little too candidly. Clip 13.
That's what I'm saying. You know, you never get what you really want. You know? It's like I've got these two guys, right? One has got serious, and I mean serious money. And the other one, married. And the married guy really makes it happen for me. You know, and the rich guy, I mean, he's single and all, but it's like you're always looking for that special feeling, you know? If the married one were single, it wouldn't even be a contest.
You want my advice?
Sure.
Go for the money.
Oh. Well, that's what I'm going to do.
So then Carter staggers out to the street looking shattered, and the show does not cut back to Sydney, like, explaining anything else about, like, but I really love him or whatever. So we're supposed to think this is the end of what she has to say about this, too, which is kind of rude to her character, but also, I guess I get it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were doing a good job with the subtle, like, she is very fond of him and not used to being treated nicely,
yes.
But maybe it's not like a raging lady bone on her end, right. And I thought they were doing well with that, but now they just have to make it really gross. And also, which Kyle is she in love with again? Like,
yeah, yes. Sorry. And it's been so long since the two of them had any assignations at all.
Yeah,
like,
and it was one thing, and girl, he has a boyfriend.
Yes. Speaking of whom, Nick finds Peter just after Peter has bought a huge bouquet of roses. And Nick lets Peter know there won't be any more midnight golf. Taylor is going to be faithful from now on. And if Peter doesn't put an end to things, Nick will put an end to him.
Ooh.
And that night, Sydney parks her car on the tarmac by Carter's private jet. And I think we all fear what is going to happen next, but let's get through it together in this long clip 14.
Carter, I am so excited and so looking forward to this. God, what a beautiful jet. How do you like my travel outfit? It's a Casablanca kind of thing, magic hat.
I'm sorry. I'm not sure I should be going anywhere with you.
What do you mean? I've changed everything. I'm ready to run off with you. I mean, I've given up things. What?
You don't have to. You can go back to your life and get what you really want. Because you don't really want me, Sydney.
I do. Carter. We can go to Mexico, go on the beach, have some drinks, talk, what?
I'm flying to San Francisco and I'm taking back control of my company, Sydney. Sydney. Someday, you will find the guy who has everything you need. Okay?
I'm going to guess that was supposed to be the stairs or something going up on the plane, but it really sounded like a 1990s dust vacuum, like Dustbuster, warming up.
Oh, shit, we forgot to clean the plane before Mr. G showed up. Yeah,
quick, very slowly, with the Dustbuster.
Get the Roomba! Oh, God.
And that's where we leave all these idiots for another week. So let's close up by naming our episode MVP. Oh, my God. Who even? Matt, who avoided all this, was he even in this episode?
I don't think so. That's an excellent pick. I'm going to give an honorable mention to Laura Layton and Chad Lowe, who were both about 200,000% better in that last scene than this show deserves.
Yep.
But my real MVP is Amanda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Least valuable player. We gave it to Jake last week, and I stand by that. But this week, I'm going to say Allison for taking it back. Are you an idiot?
Yeah. I'm going to go with the marketing division at the National Association of Pimps. Josh.
Josh took over the book for Sheldon the Pimp, who had this roster before he did.
I just can't, you know, Topher. I just can't stop thinking about Tom Hanks in Big when he's filling out his work application. He's like, Josh, like, what is happening? When is carpool coming for Josh? Next time on Again With This, Kimberly's still got some plotting moves. Craig moves into the complex and Amanda moves on from Peter. We'll never move on from bringing you visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. They're all at againwiththispodcast.com. We're on Twitter at AWT90210. You can drunk dial us at 210-920-4699. And you can and should join our Patreon page. There is a shit ton of extra Melrose and 90210 content there, including our monthly recaps of the 90210 OMG podcast, which you can hear if you're a high roller at the $5 level and up. Once again, we will remonstrate with you. Do not listen to yourselves.
Do not.
To the professionals. You will find all of this at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm Derparazzo Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Donnybrook and a question mark, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is filthy rich computer genius, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Oh, who wrote this?
Donnybrook is my drag king name.